Yeah, now we can.
Yeah, I rang the bell. So,
okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
So it should be fine.
Okay, cool. Thanks. Okay, so our next speaker is Tony Yu Yu from Caltech, who will tell us about cluster algebra via non-Archimedean enumerative geometry.
Thank you very much for the introduction. And I would also like to thank the organizers for the invitation. It's my great pleasure to speak here. I have also shared the notes of my talk in the chat, so that please feel free to just read back and forth if necessary during my talk. And also, please feel free to interrupt me and ask questions. The title of my talk is Cluster Algebra via Non-Archimedean Enumerative Geometry. It's joint work with Sean Keel. Let me start with the history, a little bit of history. On June 10, 2013, I participated in a conference called Cluster Algebras and the Tropical Geometry in Strasbourg, France. And during the conference, I asked Bernard Keller, what is the relationship between cluster algebras and tropical geometry? Because these are the two subjects in the title of the conference. And Bernard replied that it is not clear, so we are organizing this conference to figure it out. In November 2014, comes the preprint by Gross, Hacking, Keel, Kondasevich, Canonical Basis for Cluster Algebras. So they introduced the notion of scattering diagrams and broken lines from the subject of mirror symmetry into the theory of cluster algebras. I'm sure that Mark may have explained it during his talk, although it was too early for my time. These objects are essentially combinatorial constructions, and they have the flavor of tropical geometry, but it is not clear what exactly are the geometric objects behind these combinatorial objects. It is written in GHKK. So GHKK wrote in their paper that morally, they should be tropicalizations of holomorphic disks. And the question is, how do we go from morally to scientifically? Because this is the heuristic idea, but if we really look at these holomorphic disks or pseudo-holomorphic disks in symplectic geometry, it's the relation, it's not totally obvious. Lacking a precise geometric interpretation, several things in GHKK remain conjectural. So several constructions and also conjectures, they feel right in GHKK, but we are unable to prove within the combinatorial framework inside the GHKK. So the goal of this talk is to answer the above questions. We would like to find the right geometric object, and then we would like to establish the relation between this geometric object and scattering diagrams and these combinatorial objects, scattering diagrams, broken lines. And finally, we would like to use our geometric interpretation to prove the conjectures in GHKK. So here is a diagram summarizing the idea, the main ideas. this geometric object that we would like to propose is non-Archimedean analytic curves in cluster varieties. So the idea is that we consider these non-Archimedean curves, and when we take tropicalization, we will get scattering diagrams and broken lines, these combinatorial objects. And this relation between cluster algebras and the scattering diagram broken lines are provided by GHKK's paper. So we can go this way, and this gives an interpretation of this geometric interpretation of these combinatorial objects. And on the other hand, we can also go directly, like on the left-hand side, we can go directly from these algebra geometric objects to cluster algebras. You can go directly without passing through any combinatorial objects on the right. So we really have the relation of this triangle. More precisely, for the right-hand side, the tropicalization, given any non-Archimedean analytic curve in the cluster variety, we can associate to it two combinatorial objects. So one is called a spine, another is called a twig. I will explain them more detail later. And this spine will give rise to the broken line in this GHKK picture, and twig will give rise to scattering diagram in the GHKK picture. So here the tropicalization really means we have two things, two associated combinatorial like trees. One is spine giving rise to broken lines, and another is twig giving rise to these walls in the scattering diagram. Let me remark that now we also have an alternative geometric realization of scattering diagrams and broken lines. It's based on the notion of punctured log curves developed by Abramovich, Chen, Gross, and Siebert. And they really have a full-fledged theory of logarithmic enumerative geometry that can be used to also both for this geometric interpretation as well as for mirror symmetry constructions. So it's very natural to ask what's the relation between non-Archimedean curves and logarithmic curves. The answer is very simple. Logarithmic curves are just special fibers of formal models of non-Archimedean curves. If you don't know what it means, it's just basic techniques in non-Archimedean geometry. We have the technique of formal models. It's one way of studying non-Archimedean geometry using tools from algebraic geometry. So once we take formal model, and then the special fibers are exactly the log curves. So that's so in this sense, it's very natural to have both the non-Archimedean interpretation together with the logarithmic interpretation. It's very common in the study of non-Archimedean geometry that we sometimes resort to the special fiber in order to make certain constructions or proofs. So this gives the relationship between log curves and non-Archimedean curves. But let me remark that although at the level of these curves, they are related via this formal model construction, but we are still far from actually getting a direct comparison between the curve counts, because eventually we are interested in the number, the counts of the curves, and to compare the enumerative series, it's still unknown for the moment, because both enumerative series are quite long story. Okay, now let me give more details of the picture. So I will give just a quick recall of log Calabi-Yau varieties and essential skeletons. And then I will introduce skeletal curves, which is a key notion in the theory. After that, we can count skeletal curves in a pretty naive way, and they will give rise to the canonical scattering diagram. So once we get the canonical scattering diagram, we can apply it to a cluster theory, because cluster varieties are in particular log Calabi-Yau varieties. So the theory applies to cluster varieties as a special case. And this leads to some interesting applications. For example, we can obtain a more conceptual understanding of the positivity of the Laurent phenomenon in cluster algebras, because we can just interpret the coefficients of the Laurent, the coefficients in the Laurent phenomena as counts of some non-Archimedean curves. And if, and since I said that somehow these counts are really naive counts, so it's just the cardinality of some set, then we obtain this positivity or an integrality directly from this geometric picture. So just the number of something. And it also leads readily to the GHKK broken line convexity conjecture, because eventually it reduces to some simple convexity properties of non-Archimedean curves. And then with this non-geometric interpretation, we no longer need the GHKK EGM assumption, can be removed. It's technical assumption of the paper. And we can also get the independence of choice of seed, which was conjectured also in GHKK, because since our approach is geometric and it doesn't really, the choice of seed, although it's important for the combinatorial construction, but from the geometric approach, a log Calabi-Yau variety, we just work with the associated log Calabi-Yau variety. The way it came from cluster seeds, like different ways, do not matter. We also obtain a geometric explanation of the change of scattering diagram under mutation. Okay, so now let me talk about more mathematical details. We start with log Calabi-Yau varieties and essential skeletons. So we fix any non-Archimedean field. You can choose your favorite one. They will all work. And recall that for any algebraic variety X over non-Archimedean field K, we can take Berkovich analytification and obtain a so-called K-analytic space. As a set, it consists of pairs, psi nu, where psi is a scheme point, and the nu is an absolute value on the residual field at psi extending the one on K. And furthermore, we also have a topology, weak topology, together with a sheaf of analytic functions. So this is what a non-Archimedean analytic space is. And here we are using the underlying topological space developed by Vladimir Berkovich. And this is a picture of the analytification of an elliptic curve with beta reduction. Next, if furthermore we are given some pluricanonical form omega on our non-Archimedean space, we can take Temkin's Kähler seminorm and we obtain an upper semi-continuous function on this analytic space. So it's just a real valued function. If we take the maximum locus, we will get a polyhedral subset, which we denote by SK omega. It's the skeleton associated to this form omega. So if we take union, so this depends on omega, and if we take union of all possible omega, we get a subset, and this is called the essential skeleton of X. So Temkin's formulation is the most general, but the notion was studied by Kansevich Soboman, Mustata Nikes, and many other people in various levels of generality. Here are some examples. If X is the algebraic torus, or the identification of the algebraic torus, then the essential skeleton is just Rn. And for this example that I drew above, the essential skeleton is the circle S1. And for K3 surface with maximal degeneration, the essential skeleton is the sphere inside the analytic space. Now let's recall that a Calabi-Yau, a variety is called log Calabi-Yau. If all log pluricanonical bundles are trivialized by the tensor power of a volume form. But you can just think of cluster varieties if you don't want to think of the abstract definition. So for example, in the case of cluster variety, U contains dense open algebraic torus. And in this case, the skeleton is really simple. It's just Rn, since the skeleton only sees the birational geometry of the variety. Now let me introduce skeletal curves. It's really a key notion in the whole theory. So the idea is to consider a curve C in the log Calabi-Yau variety U analytic. We see that we have some log Calabi-Yau variety U, and it has some skeleton inside, some piecewise linear subset SKU, and we consider some curve C. So if the dimension of U is greater or equal to 2, then by dimensional reason, the curve C has no chance to meet the skeleton. Because in some sense, skeleton sits on the generic, very generic points of the variety. And anything of lower dimension has no chance to meet the skeleton. But the surprise is that we can let C, this curve C, touch the skeleton if we allow the curve to be defined over a big non-Archimedean field extension, K prime of K. So in order for some smaller dimensional thing to touch the generic point, we just let the smaller dimensional thing to be defined over a bigger field extension. It seems a weird procedure to do in algebraic geometry, but it's surprising that in this non-Archimedean world, as soon as some K point of my curve C touches the essential skeleton SKU, then the whole skeleton of C must lie inside the essential skeleton of U. So there is a precise theorem that we prove for this heuristic idea. I put it in my note for the precise statement. And but let me just say that whenever we have it's let me just say that the idea is simply that if our curve somehow touches the skeleton, then the skeleton of the curve will just completely map into the skeleton of the variety. And we call such curves skeletal curves. So let's skip this precise statement. We just look at the example. At an example of P1 mapping into the algebraic torus. So the theorem says that if any k point of my curve touches the skeleton, this blue plane of the target, then the whole skeleton of the curve, this red skeleton here, will just completely lie in this plane. And this is so good because immediately you see that it's the skeleton, some kind of a tropical curve. So in some sense, the advantage of this skeletal curve is that they have canonical tropicalization. We just restrict our map to the skeleton of the curve, and then we get a tropical curve. And this is much nicer than the usual construction of tropicalization, because this construction is independent of any choice of retraction from this analytic variety to the skeleton of U. I just recall you that whenever we want to define tropical curve, we always need to choose some retraction. And so for example, we choose different minimal model and they give rise to different retraction. And the different retraction will produce different tropical curves. So the tropicalization procedure is not really canonical in general. It depends on the choice of retraction, unless it is for skeletal curves. Then we get a canonical tropicalization. And this canonical tropicalization, we call it spine, the spine associated to the tropical curve. So yeah, to the skeletal curve. Yeah, so we have natural sources of skeletal curves when we try to count curves in log Calabi-Yau varieties. So here, let's consider, we have some data. It just means that we have some, we start with some data and we consider the moduli stack of some stable maps satisfying some incidence conditions with the boundary. So we consider such moduli space of stable maps with some given intersection numbers of the boundary with also given multiplicities. And we also have some interior marked points. So if we, for any interior marked points, we can consider evaluation at this interior marked point. And we also have the usual stabilization map. Done. Then the theorem is that the theorem is that this map phi I over the skeleton of the target has finite fibers and the pre-image consists of skeletal curves. So it just says that in this moduli problem, when we want to count these kind of rational curves, we just have plenty of skeletal curves. They are just pre-image of the skeleton of the target. So then we see that since all the pre-images, the pre-image consists of skeletal curves, then by the advantage of the skeletal curve, its span is well-defined. And conversely, given any abstract span in In other words, just some tree. In the skeleton of the Calabial variety, Lo Calabial, we can try to count the number of skeletal curves giving rise to this given spine. So it is indeed possible, and it's also very simple. We just look at this evaluation map file and take pre-image, and then in some sense, it's really a naive count. We just count the number of analytic skeletal curves with the given span. Here I put a length, because in algebraic geometry, we say length, but it's really just a cardinality if we pass through an base field extension. Up to a base field extension, it's just cardinality of a set. So intuitively, we are just counting these kind of purple curves with a given spine. And more generally, we can also count open curves, these curves with boundaries with associated to truncated spines. So, and we will use these counts for the scattering diagram. So here I wrote the definition, construction of the counts, but let's skip the details. Okay, so now let's apply these counts to construct a scattering diagram. So for the scattering diagram, let's fix this data. We have some Lo-Calabial, some SNC compact, some Lo-Calabial U, SNC compactification Y, and assume that it contains a torus with co-character lattice M. Now, given a hyperplane, an N-perp in this co-character space, and any generic point X in this plane, M-perp, and we consider an incoming vector W and an outgoing vector V, and we also fix some curve class, then we just consider a very small, we call it infinitesimal spine, very small, just this bending segment, bending at this point X with incoming direction W and outgoing direction V. And by what we talked about, these skeletal curves and counts of skeletal curves, we obtain an associated count of analytic curves, just a non-negative integer n. So using these numbers, we can define wall crossing transformation associated to this wall and this generic point X on the wall. It's simply a sum over all these counts, of all these counts times these usual monomials in the wall crossing transformation. And we just sum over all possibilities, like sum over all possible curve class and all possible incoming directions from one side of the hyperplane. Yeah, so it depends on the outgoing direction. If the outgoing direction actually lies on the right side, then we do this. If it lies in the plane, then we don't change. Yeah, so this, we define this wall crossing transformation directly by these counts of skeletal curves. And there is some small convergence issue to deal with. But then the theorem is that actually this formula extends to an automorphism of the fraction field of some completion. And moreover, it's actually given by one function called a scattering function, which is really part of the usual scattering diagram data. So before I end, let me just quickly say that we can also make everything invertible by ignoring curve classes, because the curve classes is not usually part of the data of scattering diagram. And then we will get a consistent scattering diagram in the sense of Kondratiewicz, Sobolman, Gross, and Siebert. So finally, we apply the whole theory to the cluster algebra case. It's very simple because if we take spec of the upper cluster algebra, we just obtain a log Calabi-Yau variety. So our theory applies, and we get these consequences that I already talked in the beginning of my talk. So thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Tony, for this beautiful talk. If you have any questions online, please just unmute yourself and ask the question. If there's a question in the room, I think Raquel will kindly hand you the microphone.
There is one.
Hey, Tony.
Yes.
Just a very quick question. So, because you already got the mirror construction without using the scattering diagrams, right? So
yeah.
In this case, you constructed a scattering diagram, and then, so are you gonna kind of just did you give another kind of equivalent construction of the mirror for log Calabi-Yau containing a torus?
Yes. So eventually they are the same. Whether we go directly by writing down the structure constants, or we go through, the scattering diagram. They give rise to the same mirror.
Okay, so the purpose of doing this scattering diagram story for you is more like solving those kind of conjectures left out in the JHKK paper, or you just kind of want to give like equivalent way to construct mirror?
So actually the comparison with JHKK paper, it's interesting to do. For two reasons. One is that because the theory of non-Archimedean curve counting, it's and also similarly the theory of log curve counting, it's a lot of foundational work and seems very abstract. So when we have, but GHKK's paper is a very concrete combinatorial construction. So it's nice to do a comparison. Then one way, we also get a combinatorial like algorithm for computing these non-Archimedean invariants. Because otherwise the non-Archimedean invariants are some kind of abstract numbers that we know that we can have some properties, but we don't know how to compute them. The comparison theorem is in some sense a way of computing them.
I see.
Yeah. And of course, on the other hand, it's also good to get like a geometric interpretation in this GHK case or for GHK case constructions. Our motivation is really to see how our constructions can be related to all the existing ones.
Thanks for the answer.
Yeah, thank you very much for the question.
Thank you.
Question by Salvatore Stella.
Thank you very much for your talk. And you mentioned the comparison with the GHKK.
Yes.
So we know that the scattering diagram constructed from in GHKK is determined by the set of incoming walls. And here,
yes,
the thing you constructed is more globally defined, like by,
yes,
by counting these skeletal curves. So how is the comparison like? Can you briefly explain that?
Yeah, so actually the way we prove the comparison is that first in our theory, we also, First, we prove the consistency result. And then in our theory, we also need to figure out what is the role of this incoming and outgoing walls. Because in GHK case construction, everything starts with some fixed data, initial data of incoming walls, then all the outgoing walls are generated by the algorithm. And yeah, it's actually a very good question because really for the comparison, you are right that our construction is global. Somehow it's just purely geometric. We don't have the walls a priori. We get the walls as after all this curve counting. So for the comparison, then we have to really figure out what are the meaning of incoming and outgoing for our walls. So actually we especially developed, like in the last two sections of our paper, we especially introduced this notion of incoming and outgoing. It's kind of not really necessary for the non-Archimedean theory itself, but to compare with GHKK, somehow we also give a reinterpretation of incoming and outgoing in terms of some geometric, in the more geometric way. And then we check that in our world, the incoming walls are identified with the GHKK incoming walls by just the explicit computation. And then by the consistency results, the scattering diagrams get identified.
I see, thank you. So it seems that in your construction, you have to choose some torus from the beginning. Does that mean that the torus you choose is just a cluster torus for the comparison?
It's not necessary.
But I mean just for comparison with the GHKK one, you choose a torus.
For comparison, of course, we start with a seed and that determines a torus. Because GHKK starts with a seed.
So the torus you can start with may not be related to the cluster torus by like a sequence of mutation by rational transformation.
Yeah, we can also work with other things, but just for the comparison, of course, we start with the same torus.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the question.
Okay, there are some questions online. Salvatore Stella has a question. Oh, we can't hear you, Salvatore.
You can't, oh, one second.
Okay, now
can you hear me now? Mm-hmm. Good. Probably he already answered the question, partially at least. How explicit is this counting compared to how explicit it is in GHKK? For example, for structure constants in GHKK, it says you have to compute all the possible broken lines with such and such properties. But then the count is not really more explicit than this. Is your counting any better?
Thank you. It's a great question. Here, we have different counts for different purposes. You mentioned the structure constants. and there, yeah, that's one of the most important counts. And in my talk, I explained briefly mentioned there's also counts for the wall crossing functions and also the counts for these broken lines. So at least we have three kinds of counts for the walls, for broken lines, and for structure constants. So in GHKK, the order is first by this Kondratsevich-Sobolev algorithm. Starting from initial walls, we generate the numbers associated the wall crossing functions. And then from wall crossing functions, we build these broken lines. So the number of broken lines is given by the numbers associated to the walls. And then the structure constants, as you mentioned in their paper, it's like looking at some of broken lines, two broken lines meeting at one place. So from here, from the more geometric viewpoint, each number we have, like each type of this number, whether it's wall crossing function or broken line or structure constants, can be interpreted by some counts of non-Archimedean curves. So for example, for the structure constants, they can be given by counting some non-Archimedean analytic disks that with boundary at one point corresponding to the last like output for this structure constants, and then this disk has all the infinite directions corresponding to the input for the structure constants, if we are computing structure constants for the multiplication of some theta functions, theta p1 to theta pn, and we compute the coefficient of before theta q, so we will be counting non-Archimedean curves with infinite directions given by p1 to pn and with one finite direction given by q. Yeah, and it's easy to relate directly also to the GHKK framework, because when we have non-Archimedean curve, we have the associated spine, and then the spine will be a tree, and we can cut the tree in the edges. So in my paper with Sean, we proved that when we cut these trees, we get some formula to compute the counts called a gluing formula. It's actually some generalization of what I did in the previous simpler example. And applying the gluing formula, we can cut any complicated tree into just a small like pieces of these bending lines, and they correspond exactly to the broken lines in the GHK case language.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think there's one last question in the chat. I think you might have just answered it. What is the direct link between non-Archimedean curves and cluster algebras?
Oh, yeah, so thank you for the question. So I think the title of my talk is to explain the link between non-Archimedean curves and the cluster algebras. Is it very direct? Oh, you are asking how to bypass the scattering diagram. Ah, yeah, sure. So that's exactly actually part of my answer to the previous question regarding the structure constants. I mean, since, as I said, in GHKK, we go in steps. We start with a scattering diagram, we go to broken lines, and then we go to structure constants. But here we can go directly without passing through this scattering diagram. We can get structure constants directly, and this is related to the Fock-Gontroff dual. It gives the mirror construction for cluster variety, and in it's related to the Fock-Gontroff conjecture. In simple cases, it gives back like the dual for the Fock-Gontroff dual variety.